here comes the 20th Century Limited, streamliner between New York and Chicago. Yes, stop, look, and listen to the celebrated sports announcer, Bob Elson, as he interviews some of America's leading personalities on the new luxurious New York Central streamliner, the 20th Century Limited, brought to you by the makers of Crank Shave Cream, Colorback, and Marrow Oil Shampoo.
Hello, friends. This is Bob Elson aboard the 20th Century Limited, one of the world's great trains, where we have a host of travelers today and some very interesting people. We have a well-known newspaper man and author as our guest on the Century today, Mr. Herman Cogan, who is co-author with Lloyd Wendt of a book called Bet a Million. It's now on the bestseller list, and it's a biography of Bet a Million Gates. Mr. Cogan, what can you tell us about Bet a Million Gates? What was his right name, by the way?
Well, his right name was John Warren Gates. He was from West Chicago. He was an old Southern Illinois or Western Illinois farm boy. He went out west, Texas, when he was 21 to sell barbed wire to ranchers out there. And it was the start of a great fortune that finally made about $40 million for him by the time he died.
When did he start gambling?
Well, he probably started gambling when he was about 8 or 9 years old in his hometown. There was a fairly wild railroad section in his town. He'd play poker with the railroad men. And when he went out in Texas, of course, he was in San Antonio, which was also a very wild, rip-roaring town at the time, and had a lot of opportunity to go to the various gambling palaces and do a lot of pretty rugged card playing.
Mr. Cogan, did Gates ever really bet $1 million at a time?
No, as far as we could find out, he never did. He made $1.5 million one afternoon in 1900 in England, betting on the horses. And as a result of that, the news was so sensational that the various sports writers of the time said that he'd actually bet $1 million, and the name pretty well stuck. It was a name, incidentally, that he hated. Anybody who called him Bet a Million, he'd walk away from them if they talked to him in a conversation.
Was it true that he would risk a large amount of money on the turn of a card?
Well, not only the turn of a card, but he had on a rainy day in his office, it was said that he and his various partners, when he was in the steel business, would bet $1,000 on the fastest raindrop on the window pane, or he would bet a large amount of money on a wet piece of sugar. He and another pal would sit at the Palmer House or some other famous place, each with a piece of sugar in front of him, and bet on which piece of sugar would attract the most flies in 20 minutes.
Mr. Cogan, what was the other book that you collaborated on?
Well, Lloyd Wendt and I wrote a book in 1943 called Lords of the Levee, which was a biography of the famous alderman of the First Ward, Bathhouse John Coughlin, and Hinky Dink Kenna.
What were some of the unusual things, let's say, that you found out about those two worthies?
Well, it would take the next 2 weeks to talk about them and tell the various things they did. They, of course, were the rulers, as I told you, of the old First Ward in Chicago, and ran it pretty regularly until the days of Capone, 1920. And then they just stayed there by sufferance. They were there only because they were handymen for the hoodlums and the syndicate to have around. It's hard to pick out any single incident, any single story about Bathhouse John. Of course, Bathhouse, you know, was the man who wrote all these fabulous poems, or it was said he wrote them, although they were actually written by a Tribune reporter named John Kelly. He wrote poems with strange titles. He was the Falstaff Openshaw of his day. Things like, My Sweetheart Sleeps by the Side of the Drainage Canal, and They're Tearing Up Clark Street Again. And, of course, his famous song, Dear Midnight of Love, which was a little bit weird, put it mildly.
Mr. Cogan, where did the Bathhouse John part come from?
Well, Bath, or John Cogan, had been a rubber in a bathhouse when he was about 19, and from there he got into politics. He had gotten to know famous politicians, and they took him into politics, and it stuck to him, of course, the rest of his life.
And where did the Hinky Dink come from?
Well, that's a matter of some conjecture. He was a very small man, and he always said that Joseph Medill, the old editor of the Tribune, of the old Tribune, had given him that name. He used to sell papers outside the old Tribune building, but various other people deny that, and he himself, of course, although we interviewed him, would never tell it.
Mr. Cogan, what is your next writing venture?
Well, it's hard to say. Lloyd and I are thinking over several things. We'd like to do a biography again of Big Bill Thompson. We're interested in the people, you see, the bad people of Chicago. They're far more interesting than the so-called good people.
Well, Mr. Cogan, thank you very much for telling us this interesting story. And by the way, try a shave with our product. It's Crank Shave Cream with Dioxin, and it's wonderful. And once you use it, I'm sure you'll never want to shave with anything else.
Well, I will. I use it a lot.
Well, that's well. Thank you very much. And that was Mr. Herman Cogan, who is the co-author with Lloyd Wendt of a bestseller called Bet a Million. a biography of Bet a Million Gates. Friends, there are a lot of you men listening tonight who might be called the man from Missouri or the show me type of gent, right? Well, you're the ones that I want to have listen carefully. How would you like to get rid of that beat-up feeling that your face suffers from when you scrape off the old beard? Well, that's natural. And what you need is a shave cream switch. And Cranks is just what the doctor ordered. Cranks is so different from old-fashioned shave creams, you'll say to yourself, how come? You see, Cranks and only Cranks has the secret magic of whisker-wilting dioxin. And, brother, that dioxin absorbs the oil on the beard so the water can soak the whiskers soft. You get the slickest, cleanest shave without any trace of that raw, biting, after-shave feeling. To prove what I say, here's all you have to do. Buy a tuber jar of Crank's Brushless or Brush Lather Cream. Use it for just 1 week. If it doesn't do what I say, put new pep and ginger in the old boy, give you that please this punch look, send the unused portion to me, to Bob Elson, 540 South Wells Street, Chicago 7, Illinois, and I'll send you twice what you paid. Fair enough? But do it now. Don't be a putter-offer. Don't abuse that face of yours any longer. Remember, it's Crank Shave Cream with wonder-working, whisker-wilting dioxin. Your best bet with no regrets. We have a very charming British actress as our guest on The Century today, Miss Frances Rowe. She's the leading lady for Maurice Evans' production of the George Bernard Shaw comedy, Man and Superman. Miss Rowe, did I understand or did I read someplace that you had a long visit with George Bernard Shaw before you left England?
Yes, I did. I plucked up my courage and asked him for an appointment just before I came back this summer from a visit to England. And I got my appointment and I got utterly lost finding the tiny village where he lives, but I got there on the dot at 4 o'clock and I had 40 minutes with him. He's 93 and a half and he's as bright as a button and absolutely charming. And I took a photographer down with me, a very young girl, fortunately. And he was even more charming to her, I think, than he was to me. And we were photographed out in the garden on a lovely, sunny day. And I looked a bit stiff when I found myself standing beside the great man. So he took one look at me and said, well, come on, give me the glad eye.
Miss Rowe, what were just a few of the things that you talked to Mr. Shaw about, do you recall?
Yes, I talked to him. He started the conversation by asking me how long I'd played the part of Anne Whitefield, which is the heroine of Man and Superman. And I said, with some trepidation, nearly 300 times. And he said quite firmly, it's too long. So I didn't know whether I was going to be booted out of the front door or not, but I wasn't, and he launched off into a wonderful series of anecdotes about great actors of the past and how long they'd played the roles that they played. And then we talked about the play itself and how it should be acted, and I asked him how long he'd lived in the village and things like that. And then I think that and the being photographed and his coming right down to the gate to see me off and telling me not to get lost on the way home really occupied most of the time that I was there. Yes.
Miss Rowe, did Mr. Shaw say anything about his present writings? Is he still writing?
Oh, he's still writing. No, he didn't actually say anything about that at the time, but I have heard that he is writing at least one new play. There's really no stopping him. It's quite remarkable, I think, for a man of his age. But then why shouldn't he be? Because he's obviously one of the greatest men alive today, I think, don't you?
Well, he certainly is. Miss Rowe, what about your experience in England? Were you always on the legitimate stage?
Yes, I was always on the legitimate stage. Sometimes I've been forced to sing in a play, which has embarrassed me and the audience very much. But on the whole, I'm allowed just to speak, which is what I prefer. I wish I were a singer or a dancer, because I always think when I go to musicals that they're the most fascinating and exhilarating things in the world. I love Annie Get Your Gun and Brigadoon and Oklahoma, and I feel very envious of the people who can sing and dance as well as talk, but I just talk.
Miss Rowe, what about your experience of playing with Mr. Maurice Evans?
Well, that's absolutely wonderful, I can say, wholeheartedly. I don't think I've ever enjoyed working with anybody as much as I have working with Maurice Evans. He's the most marvelous person to play opposite. We seem to be almost telepathic on the stage. Each of us somehow knows what the other is going to do, and I think we really have great fun together. I do, I know, and I chase him night after night, and I get him just.
You know, the play, to my way of thinking, has a rather odd title.
Ooh,
what does the title exactly mean?
Well, I ought to have asked Bernard Shaw exactly what he meant by Man and Superman, because I don't think even when you've read his preface, it's quite clear. But most people assume that I am Superman because I get the man in the end. But the play really is about Shaw's idea that it is not the man who proposes and chases the woman, but the woman who, very subtly, if she's clever, really chases the man. And that's what I do in the play.
Did Mr. Shaw say anything to you about his I mean his writings through the years about which of his particular plays or writings that he enjoyed the most as he looked back on?
I didn't ask him any questions like that. I was a little diffident, as you can imagine, about saying what I should say to him. He did talk about Pygmalion, not as though it were his greatest play or anything like that.
Oh, I thought that was wonderful.
That was a wonderful play, and it's one of my favorite parts. I have played, too, in another great play of his, which is difficult to do on the stage because it lasts so long, and that's Back to Methuselah. And if I hadn't been so frightened, I might have asked him about that play, because it's a wonderful play.
By the way, what about his hearing at 93?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. I don't think he's hard of hearing at all, and there's very little hesitancy in his speech either. The eyes don't twinkle perhaps quite as much as they used to do, which is understandable. And he looks very frail and very delicate. He looks rather like a being in another world.
Well, Miss Rowe, it's been so nice having this chat with you on the Century Today, and we wish you continued success. And by the way, to keep your lovely hair even lovelier, here's a bottle of Merrow Oil shampoo.
Oh, how lovely. Thank you very much. I shall use it at once.
Thank you so much. And that was a very charming British actress, Miss Frances Rowe, who is the leading lady for Maurice Evans's production of the George Bernard Shaw comedy, Man and Superman. Friends, in city after city, Crank Shave Cream, containing whisker-wilting dioxin, is on its way to becoming America's most popular shaving cream. In 3 years' time, Crank sales have passed 7 of the leading shave cream brands in New York City. In Chicago, mind you, a recent independent survey shows Crank's the number one favorite by a wide margin. Yes, in market after market, both Crank's brushless and brush leather is booming to the front, and with good reason. Men, for a clean, smooth, non-irritating shave, try Crank's, the totally different shave cream containing whisker-wilting dioxin. And then you'll know why the big swing is to Crank's right in your own city. And now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye for today from the world-famous streamliner, the 20th Century Limited.
Be sure to stop, look, and listen next time you hear Bob Elson on the Century coming your way.
Say, this Merrow Oil shampoo is wonderful.
Why have hair that's dry, drab, unruly, lifeless looking, and your scalp itchy because you need a Merrow Oil shampoo? Play safe. Do what professional beauty operators do. Use the famous gentle cleansing action of Merrow Oil shampoo. Special blend of pure, rich oils to change dull, lifeless hair to easy-to-manage hair that gleams and sparkles with brilliant beauty. Will not dry out hair and scalp because it's Merrow Oil. Cannot leave soap film because it's Merrow Oil. Marvelous before and after permanent, and for hot Merrow Oil conditioning treatments. Have lovelier shining hair with genuine Merrow Oil. Wonderful for all your family. Two types, non-foaming or super foamy. Take your choice. Get Merrow Oil shampoo in the special hand grip bottle at drug counters everywhere.